Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Your Seinfeld copyright violation.
Yeah, right? I know. See, I was trying to think of a good way to intro, and I actually watched Seinfeld last night, so I thought about that. This is Nothing Urgent, by the way. I'm Derek Evers.
This is Chris Robbins.
And this is where we talk about nothing urgent. We have a really good show lined up today.
Very special show. Paula Deen's a racist. Derek got a bike for under $100, and Shannon the Clams are going to show up and talk to us.
That's called burying the lead right there, what you did.
Well, or heightening the anticipation.
See, that's what I like to do, but whenever you edit anything I write, you're always like, you're burying the lead.
Well, it's better than just cursing at you.
I'm going to respond now and say I'm heightening the anticipation.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, we have Shannon and the Clams coming in. As far as we know, Shannon is definitely coming in. We assume her Clams are joining her as well.
Hopefully. Every time I hear that band name, I think of the walrus in Alice in Wonderland, you know, who tricks all the oysters down in the water to, like, hang out and eat dinner with him, you know, air quotes, eat dinner. And then they all show up, and then they realize they're the dinner, and then he eats them all.
What is this? I've seen it, but I missed the intro part.
It's the fat walrus guy with the mustache. He's supposed to be, like, a robber baron, and he, like, invites all the oysters and
it's
all
a cartoon,
the shellfish.
Right?
Yeah. He invites them all to a dinner party, and then they're all staring at each other, and they're like, well, where's the food? And then he, like, looks at them and is like, well, you know.
And you don't know the name?
It's called Alice in Wonderland.
I missed the part. I was gonna be like, we need to get our producer on this to get the name of this fantastical,
this obscure fairy tale. Yeah, no. Everyone ages, you know, 3 to 8 probably in the United States has seen that film.
We should bring that up when they're here.
Maybe.
But until then, we should talk about Paula Deen and her amazing idea for a wedding reception. I actually think this is quite
the sponsors are rapidly canceling. No, wait, so explain to people who aren't on Twitter or on the internet all day long.
Well, I'll just give you, because I read about it. I didn't read it on Reddit, but I was the restaurant she owns with her brother, there's a joint sexual harassment and some sort of lawsuit.
Discrimination.
Yeah. Yeah. And the sexual harassment is against her brother, who apparently has been hitting on this person.
Okay.
And
never happens in restaurants.
Yeah.
Ever.
Never, ever. But the first part was basically about how they're both very discriminatory,
right,
and racist, and use the N-word pretty regularly and racist jokes, to which she was in her deposition. She said, yes, of course. You know, all jokes are, you know, meant to hurt someone, basically, you know, it's like insensitive to someone. But the bigger part of that story was that she also wanted to host a wedding reception that was basically slave themed, and the way she explained it was like all of them in like butler attire, the way they would do in kind of like, you know, Django Unchained or
right,
you know.
And this was all in the deposition?
Yeah, it was like a sealed deposition in court, and she basically, you know, was very open about
who, okay, but who like leaked this deposition?
Well, doesn't that become public record at
not
some point?
Not always, but sometimes it does. Like when I used to work at a law firm, when we would depose people, basically you would just lock them in a room with these attorneys for like 14 hours and then ask them questions like, what color was the sky on May 12th, 1988? And then be like, well, I'm pretty sure it was blue. And be like, are you sure about that? And be like, oh, maybe it was gray. But it just goes on forever. So like, you know, it doesn't surprise me she would admit to doing those things.
I am in using the Bings or the Googles.
But you see what I'm saying? Like it's a, I can.
It must have been public. It said a 3-hour deposition.
Whatever attorney this was who did this is a very good attorney, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So she's going to lose.
I mean, at the very, she's going to settle. It's probably going to happen.
But is anyone really that surprised that Paula Deen, you know, who basically lives in a plantation of butter, or used to, is
I mean, that
racist.
Was, yeah, I did, one of my comedian friends basically said, is anyone surprised that a fat Southern white woman is racist?
Right.
But she's not fat anymore, so I don't want, you know.
don't want to have any libel here on the no, well, it's because I'm from the South, and my grandmother is, I think I can say this, my grandmother's pretty racist. But, you know, her racism, it's just one of those things where it's like, unless you're taken out of that world, you really are just so ignorant about a lot of things.
Right.
And, you know, someone like Paula Deen, like, yeah, she's like an international star or whatever, but, you know, I bet Paula Deen's ideals probably aren't challenged on a daily basis by a lot of things.
No,
right?
No, especially not that she's making a lot of money doing what she does anyway. She probably feels less inclined to change her views.
Yeah.
She's just like the Archie Bunker of cooking. She should just take on that persona. She should just, like, you know, she should run with it, I think.
And her brother's like Meathead or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they can just totally roll with it. I mean, it just changes the branding a little bit. I mean, they probably have to slide to Fox, but, you know, it could work.
Yeah. All right. If Paula Deen's publicist is listening to this right now, we will.
We've got some
RFPs for you. We'd like to look over.
We got some ideas that you may be inclined to check out.
So you were excited about your bike?
Yeah. So bicycle? If you remember the last time we were here, I was dissing on the City Bike or the bike share program, or as Chris corrected me, it's not the bike share. It's just bike share.
It's bike share, baby.
Is that. I found that the price was a little bit off-putting, and not $100 a year.
And by price, he means $100 a year for an unlimited 45-minute trips as many times as he wants.
Right. But see,
in the course of 365 days.
Unlimited 45 minutes is a little bit deceiving.
All right, anyway, right, okay, sure.
But my point being is, like, if you're going to already spend that much, you're not that far from getting a new bike.
Right.
And Chris said that there's no way you could find a bike for $100 in New York.
A good bike is what I said.
And I found one. Bike. I found one.
You found something with two wheels and things to hold on to, so you don't fall off those wheels.
I used the beautiful Craigslist. I don't think it was stolen. That was my only fear. Is like you see these good bikes on Craigslist, and you're like, someone needs to move it quick. And you're like, where did he just steal
this? Did you have to
from?
Like give someone a footie for this price? Or did you have to like crush a bunch of hamsters with high heels?
No, I didn't. I did,
these bike
I did not have to do anything like that. It was actually this really kind of sweet old man who you could tell in his garage that he fixes up old bikes, or like he had this bike for a while. So I got an old Schwinn that, for under $100.
I took it for a spin. It's pretty solid for an $80 bike.
It is. That's the thing. It will get me from point A to point B, and I could easily make it better with like $50, like way better.
See, I don't know about that. I don't know.
What do you think?
Like $50 will get you like a pack of baseball cards to put in the spokes and some.
Is this a new? This is a new challenge. Like, I know the bike placed by me. I could change like the crank and all the stuff that is actually
what,
the inner.
What are you
workings.
Talking about? What is the crank?
Isn't that the part with the chain? And what is that thing called? It's like a crank.
Crank. Yeah. Sure,
it's like a
crank.
Lever mechanism.
Yeah, it's a crank.
You know what? But, pulley
so how
system.
Many, how many rides have you gone out on?
Well, I've only done two. And the main reason being that I don't have a helmet yet, so I'm smart. Going to see Shannon and the Clamps tonight. I'm a little bit scared about riding home in the dark with no helmet.
Well, you know.
It does have reflectors, though, so.
Well, you should get lights, too.
I know.
So a lot of, like, hardcore cyclists, the ones who wear the really tight, funny hats with the bill up, they'll say that wearing a helmet actually increases your chances of being injured by a vehicle because studies have shown that drivers tend to be less cautious when they're driving next to a cyclist who's wearing a helmet, and some data backs that up. The thing is, though, that doesn't matter when you like hit a pothole and you go over the handlebars and your head hits the pavement.
Yeah, it was funny that you mentioned that because I was actually thinking about. I was more scared about that than the cars, to be quite honest.
Oh, really?
I was like, well, when I was riding without a helmet, I was just like, man, if I take a spill right now,
yeah,
that's gonna hurt. It's like my option is like I'm carrying my computer in a backpack. I'm like I'm trying to figure out how I can fall to land on that.
You have both of your brains, your flesh brain and your computer brain.
And that one can be replaced though. Is the point I'm trying to make?
Yeah, I actually live near this guy who writes for the New York Times, and he walked in this coffee shop that we hang out in, and his like half of his face was like a scab, like he looked like Two-Face, and he just bit it on a pothole next to the water near the seaport. He wasn't wearing a helmet.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really lucky. He could have died.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm definitely more scared. I mean,
you're that kids, you could die.
Yeah, cars are scary in their own way.
Cars are giant, hulking metal death machines who do not care about
But I would venture to say that somewhere between 90 and 95% of biking injuries probably happen without cars being involved.
Wow, that's a pretty high statistic. 95%?
I mean, think about it. Most people hurt themselves by falling off their bike. There's, you know, I've never been hit by a car. I've fallen off my bike plenty of times.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'll have to look into that. I don't think that's true. I think, well, not very many statistics are taken on those accidents.
Chris was saying earlier that the show should be called Derek Assumes.
Would be an amazing name for the show, because that's what happens.
I do.
We make these assumptions, and then we sort of...
Chris tries to correct my bad facts that I don't...
Well, that's an interesting fact. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, I mean, I just made that up. That number.
Well, right. Yeah, 95%. That seems exorbitantly high.
So before we get to Shannon, who...
They're playing, we're going to say this again, but they're playing tonight at Death by Audio, and then they're playing tomorrow night at the Bowery Ballroom in Lower Manhattan.
She just texted. You're getting behind the scenes.
This is behind the fourth wall.
That she'll be coming in alone, actually.
Aw.
So that's good. Okay. We can talk about the others.
Yeah.
We can talk about behind their backs.
Yeah, screw them.
I know.
She doesn't need them.
It makes it easier in our setup, though. We don't have to squeeze them in. Although it is kind of funny, if you ever come into Roberta's, you'll see that we look out into a dining room full of people.
Because this is a dining establishment.
Yes. But my point being is that... So
they used to make everyone stand up and eat with their hands. And then after a few months of that, they were like, wait a second.
Sitting down.
What if we put chairs and tables in this place?
My point being is that I keep looking for someone to come through the door that looks like they're in a band.
Right.
But then I realize we're in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and yeah. Everyone looks like that. So it's kind of not really...
When was the last time you were in a band?
Oh, man. College.
And what was the name of the band?
Although I will say this. I did play saxophone.
It was in Rod Stewart's band for a brief stint in the Netherlands tour, 98.
I played saxophone for the Harlem Shakes on one song at Mercury Lounge. That was my one New York appearance playing in a band. And
New York
I did
City
play
appearance?
I did this is the band I was in college. We got accepted to play CMJ. This will, you know, give away my age. We got accepted to play CMJ the year of 9/11, and we were scheduled to play September 12th. And so then it got pushed back a month, and we eventually did play, and we played at CBGB's. Not the original CBGB's, but they had that downstairs. It was like CB's Gallery or something like that. But still, we were playing
there.
So you
played at CBGB's Gallery.
I did.
Derek played at CBGB's Gallery.
But we also played at that CMJ is the reason why CMJ now takes place in October as opposed to September.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they moved everything back a month after that.
So,
it still happened, but there was like 10 people there. Wait. It was like
You know, playing with the Harlem Shakes is like the least punk thing ever.
Yeah, right? I mean, well, I played saxophone. I was on one song, so.
What would you play? Like, were you competent?
Yeah, I played saxophone growing up. The band I was in at college was a saxophone band. We actually played.
What?
This is another funny little tidbit. We played. The name of the band was bad. It was called Tease to a Beatdown. It was really bad. But we, everyone just,
Tease
you
to
can
a
hear Chris
down?
Laughing, but you can't see all the people in production room laughing right now. But
wait, we want to tease in, as in like spelled tease, like tease your hair, like
but with a D, like, you know, past tense, teased.
Oh, teased. Oh, that's even worse, because then you don't know which one it is. Which
well,
word
see,
it, is.
It was kind of supposed to be like, you know, because we were kind of, I don't want to talk about it. But anyway.
But who came, wait, hold on. No.
I don't remember who came up with it.
Who came up with it?
The best part is we would do the acronym? What is it when you do the letters? Is that an acronym? We would call it TTABD. Uh-huh. But then when you think about it, it's actually the exact same amount of syllables.
Oh, is it four syllables?
Tease to beat down. Five, in five letters. So it's like, it was like the only thing that you shorten in an acronym, and it's the same length. But no, the point I was trying to get is that we opened for this ska band at the time, because, you know, any band with a horn in it automatically gets... And the ska band went on to huge fame, playing as like the house band in some Comedy Central show.
Huge fame.
So huge that I don't even remember the show.
Huge fame. No, but really, do you remember the name of that band, that ska band?
No, I don't, man. I could look it up because it was in some show.
What show? I can't remember.
It was like one where they give you like 5 minutes. It's like for up and coming comedians. And then they decide who's the winner.
And they were the house band?
They were the house band, yeah.
It's like before that gig where you guys like psyching each other up like, guys, this is the big one.
No, it was kind of funny because at that
was
point...
Was it Skaba the Hut? I just Googled this.
No, it might be. That's Joe, our producer.
I think they might have a worse name.
Well, ska bands are notorious for having
why,
horrible.
Can we talk about that? Why is that?
I think it's just because like they're so fun and happy that they just don't care.
Yeah,
you know, and they always try to make
like they have one
pun
gear
on ska.
Like they have that one gear, and their gear is always sort of like goofy.
Although Ska with a Hut is kind of good. I don't think that's who it was though.
Ska with a Hut is not good.
It definitely is not the name of the band. Because I would remember the name of the band.
Maybe they changed. Maybe they sold out and changed their name. Look into that, Joe.
Or maybe Scabba the Hutt was what they originally called, and then George Lucas called and was like, "Listen,
yeah,
listen.
That's right.
Just adding an SK in there does not make this copyright free." excuse me. So
weird. So yeah. that was your past.
That was my.
And you
my
guys
band
were a
past.
Ska band?
No. We were like a. God, this is gonna sound so cheesy. Do you remember the band Morphine?
No.
Bass, sax, and drums. Really good band, actually. It was a really good band.
Laughing.
But we were like a funky version of them. That's the funny part. Morphine was really good. That's a band you should definitely check out.
Okay.
So
well.
Yeah, now that we've gotten all serious.
Shake the time cobwebs off after that one. We just took a journey. Journey to 1996.
So I wanted really quick though before we were talking about bikes before we got sidetracked and you were talking about the police officer who was running down or threatening to run down.
Oh,
bicyclists.
Okay. So there was a if you live in New York, you might have heard that there was a large accident in the East Village this morning around 7 a.m. And this guy who was allegedly drunk driving his car ran up on the curb and just knocked out a bunch of people standing in front of a bodega. One of them was like really seriously injured. But, you know, a few hours after that, this guy sees a police officer sort of looking to pull cyclists over in the East Village on 2nd Avenue. And he asked the police officer, like, hey, are you hunting for cyclists? And the cop said, absolutely, I'm hunting for cyclists, which is in and of itself a little creepy. But, you know, he could have been joking, whatever. So this guy, he pauses for a few minutes. He, you know, messes around on his phone and he bikes somewhere else in the East Village and he sees the same cop pulled over a guy on a city bike, on a bike share bike, and they started talking, the three of them, and the cop pulled this guy over for running red light, but he didn't really run a light, red light. He was trying to like cross the crosswalk at a better time so that the cars wouldn't kill him. But this officer was lecturing the cyclist. He was saying, you know, I'm doing this for your own safety. You know, you really shouldn't be riding a bike in New York in the first place. And, you know, that given that the city like just, you know, debuted bike share, that seems like a pretty absurd comment.
And laid down
but what's,
a lot
what's
of money
more
for,
absurd
for bike
is like,
lanes, which I like.
But people don't understand, it's like, I'm, you know, you're from a place that's not a big city, you know, people get speeding tickets. There, people don't really get speeding tickets.
No, you don't
New
get
city.
Speed tickets. And I'll say this as someone who drives, I don't drive regularly, but I drive.
You drive pretty, you drive more regularly than most.
Yeah.
I would say.
And,
at least once a week.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. I have a zip car and I also have access to another vehicle.
But like, when was the last time you got a speeding ticket?
In New York, I've only gotten one speeding ticket in the state of Louisiana, and this was just like 3 months ago on our trip to South by Southwest.
I've never gotten a speeding ticket ever, but my friends have, you know, oodles of them. But here, for instance, in the East Village, last year, the entire year, the whole year, the cops gave out 11 tickets. See, 11 speeding tickets in a neighborhood of Manhattan where it's like, you know, cars definitely break the speed limit.
See,
that's
Chris
what
and I
do.
had tried to have this conversation before, and he got really angry because he is definitely anti... Well, not anti-car.
I'm pro not getting killed by a hulk of steel.
Right. So in that sense, you're pro speeding tickets to a certain extent. And my point being that the police don't serve and protect. The police are basically, they raise money for the city.
Yes.
And so you have to look at, that's a
right.
generalization.
And,
but you
parking,
have to look at
parking
where,
tickets go to the city, and speeding tickets, by and large, go to the state, which is a huge problem.
Interesting. See, that's something I didn't realize. But my point being is they're going to look for things that are going to be easy to ticket so they can pay a fine and like be on their way. Doing traffic stops are so time consuming when they can make by going up and down the street and tagging like illegally parked cars, they're going
right.
to make like four times more.
Or cyclists who, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas you go to the South and it's like, and no offense to the South or where you're, you know, but usually when I'm driving through some bumble, you know, whatever town, and it's never the big ones, it's always the small ones, they pull over people with like out of state license plates, things like that, because they realize that they can ticket them, people are going to just pay it without thinking twice about it, and it's kind of like, you know, a revenue.
But that's a good program. Analogy though, because, you know, the small town analogy is, well, these cops don't have anything better to do, right? They're not in crime ridden areas, they can just pull over speeders the whole time, and that's just what they can do. But in New York, you know, New York police officers clearly have bigger fish to fry than someone on a bike. you know, who's biking through a crosswalk to me.
Well, we'll leave it there because we were getting very serious there. And Shannon just walked in. That's an easier way to segue. I'm actually going to play one of the singles from her newest record. I say her. She's part of a band, but the band does, you know, sport her name. So Rip Van Winkle. It's one of the singles off of Dreams in the Rat House. And I'll play that song, and then I will also play Into a Dream. These are the two singles that have already been released. And then
Into a Dream is actually my favorite song.
And then
the
that's why I'm going to play it second. And then we'll have Shannon in here. So stay tuned for that.
This special program was brought to you by TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving creative professionals at all levels, from individual customers to Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation in their expertise in technology, sales, and service. Visit them on the web at techserve.com or in New York City at 119 West 23rd Street. Learn more about their in-store classes and incredible insider program. Make stuff happen. TechServe.
Interesting fact. Actually, Impos is one of the Fortune 500 companies that TechServe services.
Yeah. Why'd you drop that?
That was in the commercial. Anyway, this is Nothing Urgent, and we're joined by Shannon Shaw of Shannon and the Clams.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming by.
Oh, what a pleasure to be here.
I say thank you because you, aside from you gracing us with your presence, you are playing tonight, so I know you have some work ahead of you today.
Sure do.
I know Death by Audio is one of our favorite venues. Are you a fan?
I love it. It's actually the first place I ever played in New York about 5 years ago on our first tour.
Yeah, we hear that. I hear that, you know, often. And then Eden is such a nice guy that people
love he's the going best.
Back there. Yeah,
he's the best. I mean, I've seen him as like a professional businessman when he's working at Death by Audio, and then he came on the Bruce Cruise that Panache Booking put on last year, and he was hanging out in the hot tub pretty much the whole time, night and day.
You know, it's funny. That's
where I saw him every time.
You mentioned that, and every picture I see from that of him is from the hot tub, now that you mention it.
Yeah. So many, he's full of funny stories.
Yeah. He's a great guy. A lot of the pictures I see of him, too, are also shirtless.
Yeah, very comfortable without a shirt.
Yeah. So, well, I didn't know how to start this interview, so my first question was going to be, how much do you hate doing interviews?
Oh, I hate it a lot, but understand the importance. And I loved hearing radio interviews as a young lad at listening to Live 105, which was the really terrible alternative station in the Bay Area, California, where I grew up. And I loved that because you hear this other side of a person you look up to or listen to or hate or whatever.
Yeah, because the reason why I brought that up is because I was actually, you know, trying to do the most research I could do. I'm very bad at that, as Chris will, you know, he'll testify to my
lack of research. I grade all his book reports. They're terrible.
But the influences question, it's got to get tired of answering, doesn't it?
It does, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people want to know. I want to know about other people's influence. I might just ask it back to you if you ask me.
I know.
It's important, too. I understand.
Yeah.
When it gets annoying is when I get, like, an email interview from a publication that could easily Google or Bing that information and find it in, like, 1 second. And then instead use that answer that they discovered to ask me a far more interesting question.
Right, exactly. But that's also the issue, though, with email interviews, because I've tried to do that over email, like lead a person into a more interesting question, and it could be taken completely out of context, you know?
Oh,
it's hard to do it when you're not speaking to someone.
Well, the worst is the phone. That's my most hated interview.
Have you done any Skype interviews?
Oh, God, no. I really avoid them. Some dude wants us to interview with him over Skype and play songs. I just don't know that's going to work.
I don't think that would
work. I'm not going to let it work.
It doesn't translate like that. It's all tinny and weird, and there's like a delay.
Yeah.
Not a good delay.
Yeah, it's not going to work for me.
I don't know. I think I'd be kind of into it. So, so this was all a long-winded way for me to segue into. I did watch one of the interviews where they asked you that question, what you're influenced by. And you mentioned both you and I got to look up the names of the other people in the band. You're the only one. Cody.
Ian quit, so it's basically...
It's just you two?
Yeah, we have a new drummer who's really rad, but he's so fresh to the band.
So should we ask why Ian quit? Was it something...
He just wants to pursue...
He wants to go back to Jethro Tull?
Yeah.
I wanted to drop the Jethro Tull reference so bad, and now I don't
even
get to use that.
He would have loved that. I'll tell him.
He probably never got that.
Ever. Oh, just a few times.
Really?
I mean, we love Jethro Tull.
Well, we should just show... His last name is Amberson.
Amberson,
yeah. But his name is Ian Amberson, and you know the guy from Jethro Tull is Ian Anderson. So shake some more of the aged cobwebs off Derek right here. But so I was going to ask you guys, you probably, you know, in touring, then, you said that, like, a lot of, like, old weird pop songs is a lot of the influences. And I would say, like, I was wondering, when you tour, do you find enjoyment on, like, finding random AM radio songs? Like, I always find when you're, like, in the middle of the country and you just find these weird, like, the, you know, weirdest pop and religious songs you can ever find.
Oh, yeah. Oh, poppin', that's a good one. There's one station that we love called, like, King's Radio. It's on I-5 in California, kind of through the Central Valley down into kind of deserty region back into Southern California. I probably already said that. But it's incredible. It's, like, reminds me of what my grandma would always listen to in the kitchen all crackly, and then at night she'd play it all night and just sleep with the radio on all the time. It really reminds me of that. It just really seems like a station that hasn't been updated. I mean, maybe it's just old tapes that they keep playing. But there's no new DJs, and it's on AM, so it just sounds so nice and old and crackly and warm. I love it.
There's definitely a romanticism about that. I think that's definitely the case with your record, though, too. I think that's kind of, I mean, personally speaking, I've always liked your music, but this record seems much more on the, like, pop end of the spectrum. Not even just pop, like, more in that vein. Like, there's a certain romanticism to it that's, like, it's hard not, and anyone I play it for, there's no one, it's hard to not like the record.
Oh, that's great.
I played it for my parents, who were, like, you know, in their mid-50s, and they really dug it. And they were like, is this some oldies record? And I was like, this came out, you know, last month. And they were like, wow, people still make this music? And I was like, yes.
That's cool. I mean, well, I achieved a secret goal, I guess.
By making Chris's parents happy.
That's I really do like being able to make music that all sorts of different people like. I really do think that we kind of reach our tentacles out pretty far.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting part of that story is Chris hasn't talked to his parents in like 10, 15 years. Yeah. So that broke the ice.
I was reunited with him on Maury. Well, you mentioned like the warm, crackly sound, and that's a really good way to describe it. I think a lot of bands that are, I guess, coming out of California right now they're sort of reveling in that sound. White Fence is like one of my favorite bands. Like, yeah. Sounds amazing.
They're incredible.
Why is that happening now, you think?
Well, a lot of those dudes from that kind of crew are really into recording themselves or dealing with people that deal strictly in tape.
Right.
I'm not sure why we appreciate that sound more. I don't even know if we appreciate it more, but I can't answer it. I don't know. But I do know that a lot of those people in that circle record themselves, and so they have as much control as possible over the outcome.
I do think regions have something to do with it too, because, you know, it's the same thing if you're listening to like punk or hip hop. It's like things that come out of certain areas tend to sound a certain way. So, like, you know, to use a blanket term of like garage pop or something like that, coming out of New York sounds, you know, different than, like, let's say the Black Lips sound different than what Shannon the Clam sounds like, sounds different than, you know, Liquor Store or something like that. So, but you start, now I read that you started playing music rather late. Like you said, you picked up a bass, like, almost, you know, it said like something like well after you already finished high school.
And why a bass? Yeah.
Well, actually, I was given this Dan Electro hollow body bass that I still play when I was 15 by my high school boyfriend, who got it for like $125 on sale.
Do you still talk to him?
Yeah, we're kind of buds. He lives in Seattle. He's like a vegan, straight edge landscaper. He's fine.
She says that with a scowl.
He's a better human than in high school, you know, most people are, hopefully. But he gave it to me when I was like 15. I learned how to play part of Reptile by Nine Inch Nails, but not the whole part. And then just kind of lost interest and never thought I would play it or be good at it. But then 10 years later, 9 years later, I guess I was 24 when I started playing it.
That's really interesting. I mean, that's a pretty late starting time. I mean, yeah. I guess there is no such thing as a late starting time.
What about singing? When did you...
Same time.
Really?
Yeah.
And then...
What about writing songs? What about structuring songs and stuff like that? That come, like, over time? Or was
that started when I was, like, a tiny, crappy little kid, just making up songs all the time. I didn't even realize that that wove its way into my adult life until kind of recently. But ever since I was little, I would write lyrics, and a lot of the time accompany lyrics to whatever weird song I'm making up. Usually would come out of a fight with my brothers or my mom being mean to me or something. The first one I wrote was like about how I'm actually a secret princess and my grandma's the only person that loves me and my mom's evil.
You should have like turned that into a Shannon the Clam song.
I've kind of thought about it, but what's funny is a lot of the songs I've made up as a kid definitely have like a fantasy or a fairy tale element, which I feel like keeps coming back into our music now. Except for this one song. The first song I actually performed was sixth grade. It's called Sing One Tiny Baby Blue. It's so bad. But I totally ripped the melody and the music off of a song from the Garfield Halloween special from like 1986.
Nice.
Did you guys see that?
I think I have, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I completely ripped this song off and I performed it in sixth grade at a talent show, and I made my little brother dress up in a suit and dance next to me. It was pretty bad.
Well, it's funny you mentioned your brother, because I've noticed that a lot of, well, I don't know, some of the older videos, I don't know about the newer ones, but he made them, right?
That's my older brother.
Yeah, okay.
I'm an ex-Mormon, so I got a lot of brothers.
Yeah, that was something. How does one become an ex-Mormon? Isn't that like, I mean, I'm really ignorant about religion in general, but doesn't that mean you have like multiple parents or something?
What? Whoa. I do have multiple parents. Yeah,
everyone has multiple parents.
Now, what's the polygamist one?
That's not straightforward Mormon. Yeah. Yeah, that's like a branching.
That's a made for TV.
That's called a fundamentalist Mormon.
Oh, okay.
Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, LDS.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the commercials.
Yeah, they're really nice.
Were you
really
like
well edited?
Gung-ho when you were a kid, or was it just something you sort of had to...
I just didn't know any better and just did what my parents told me to do. And my mom is really smart. Hope this isn't offensive, but she's way too smart to stay a Mormon. And we'd ask her questions like, what does the Holy Ghost look like, Mom? Or like, why is he sometimes a clover? You know, we'd ask her questions about church or like, why is, this totally wrong? And why would I go to hell if I did this? She'd just say, don't listen to that part. They don't really know what they're talking about. So I think there was always this little seed in me from a young age that, to not really take it seriously. And my mom's been divorced twice, which is really crazy. She's like the worst Jack Mormon of all time. And so after her second divorce, she divorced my dad when I was about 8. She was like pretty high up in the church and taught all the women's classes and stuff. When they got caught wind of her divorcing my dad, she went to church and no one would look at her.
Wow.
So she was really just like, what'd you say earlier? Pop this. I'm out of here. I hate you guys. And stopped going to church. And I was supposed to get baptized. You get baptized when you're 8. And she was so angry that she wouldn't let me show up to my baptism.
Wow.
And I only wanted to because all the other people at church wanted me to.
Right.
And then both my parents stopped going. And then the bishop would like take me and my brothers into their chambers and try and convince us how wrong our parents are and how it's our responsibility to like set my mom straight. And he like told us all these ways to manipulate her. And after that, it just felt really wrong.
That is wrong. That is really weird. We should be filming a documentary or something right now. I grew up Lutheran, so like we didn't, I went bowling on Sundays. I didn't even go to church.
I grew up Catholic, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah,
but, it's one of those things where like you see stuff like that, and then you grow old enough to realize that look, this is just a thing, like a ritual for old people as they grow old. People get scared of dying.
Yeah.
People like going to the same place
it's
every
really
Sunday.
Comforting for people. Yeah,
totally.
And again, we're losing sponsors.
Brought to you by Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints.
So do you... Okay. Conflicting stories. I read that you had came up with the name Shannon the Clams before you were actually a band, and that you felt like you had to stick with it after you guys started performing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also read that you just named it because you thought it was funny to have your bandmates named clams.
No, who said that?
I think I heard it or read it in one of your interviews.
No.
Okay.
No.
First answer?
The first answer, basically. Yeah, okay. I used to perform solo. Like, when I first started playing bass and singing, I was like, I don't know, really depressed and jobless and, like, lived alone and just was having, like, a tough time. And so that's what I would do all day, is just play and sing. And then people were like, you know, maybe you should get out. Maybe you should go to, like, a, what's that called?
When
you
go open
to a
mic. Cafe,
open mic. Yeah. Like, I know this open mic. You should really just try it. Wasn't that
into
it?
I like that interpretation. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No. I can't remember.
It works.
I know yeah. what you're okay. saying. I know what you're, yeah. Impression?
Yeah, yes. That's the word I'm looking for.
So I started doing open mics like in Berkeley and in Napa. And I was really awkward. I really, to this day, don't really feel comfortable on stage. And I would wear like a black leather glove because my fingers were so sore and blistered from just playing like a psycho all the time. And then someone asked me to play a party at, when I was still in college. And I was just too embarrassed to do it by myself in front of all my peers. So I kind of assembled a band last minute. And it was already called Shannon the Clams. Like, that aspect, I guess, was a joke. Maybe that's what that comes from. It was a joke because there's nothing. It's just me by myself.
Right, right.
So then when I had a band, it was still being called Shannon the Clams. And played this one party. And it just kind of took off from there. And then it was just already too late to change the name.
Do you like clams?
Yeah. Cartoons of clams are really cute, like in Alice in Wonderland.
We talked about that before.
That was like one of the visuals that is associated with it. But I think the name is horrible.
Except for me.
The name sucks. I hate it. It's too late.
Well, let me ask you this.
I have to embrace it.
Okay. What would you call the band if you wouldn't call it Channing the Clams?
Troll Hole or
I like that one.
I don't know. I went.
That's also brings to mind cartoon.
Sort of, yeah.
Like what's the guy wrong with me? It just can't stop.
No, cartoons are good.
It was like David and the Gnome cartoons. That's what I think.
Yeah, is that the one with the under the bridge or whatever? Yeah, and these three questions or whatever.
No, that's the Billy Goat's Gruff Bro.
Yeah, okay. Come on.
I'm thinking that's why when I hear Troll Hole, that's what I think of. I don't know why. Goats, trolls, you know. Okay, but this was where I was leading with this question.
Oh,
Derek leads a lot of directions.
Yeah, I do. It's all about the segue. Do you find that... Okay, obviously you played in Hunks. You still play in Hunks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We just finished a new record. It's awesome.
Is it?
I hope you like punk.
Yeah. So does that mean it's more punk? It's
super punk.
Oh, that's awesome.
When is that?
Maximum punk.
When does that come out?
August sometime. We'll be back in August.
Yeah, excellent. We're doing this long-winded story, but we're doing shows in Comic-Con in San Diego, and we actually talked about... But you guys, I think, are going to be in Europe at that time.
Shannon the Clamps?
Yeah.
July? Yes.
Yeah, that
we'll
was
be in France most of
basically
July.
That was the reason why Hunks couldn't do it, because you won't be
Hunks
around.
Hunks was going to play
well,
Comic-Con?
We do shows at the Casbah during Comic-Con. It's not actually Comic-Con. Okay. Anyway, but my point... The question was, do you find that people automatically assume you're a lesbian because you're in Hunks and the Punks?
I don't know. Do you assume I'm a lesbian?
No, but I was just curious if that is...
We actually were going to call the show Derek Assumes, because Derek assumes so many things.
But I just
assume
that
we either have to like go back and...
Definitely, I think some people do, but Hunks and his Punks is so about Hunks. You know?
Right, yeah. Right.
That we're just like his freaky backing band kind of a thing. Like, I don't... people probably do. I don't care.
Well,
no problem.
But do people throw themselves at you
after
shows?
The reason why I brought it up is because the name Shannon the Clams also could have that kind of connotation.
Yeah, see, that makes me want to bash people's faces in is when they... When they, like, associate, it's, like, some vaginal thing that makes me crazy. Probably because I'm an ex-Mormon and that stuff, like... I'm a little wuss about
it.
See,
I made the
stuff.
Connection from the Hunks angle because everything of his is very pun-esque. So
yeah, it definitely wasn't about a pun. Definitely not a sexual pun.
All right.
Keep it clean.
Don't worry. I'm not going to bash your face.
I took a little bit of a step back.
I don't know. I hate dirty jokes. I know. Doesn't that make me such a...
No. See, Chris is that way, too, whereas I'm, like, he's like, yeah, you're always like, blah, 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 fart joke, and then I'm like, you know, I'm like the old man in the room, you know.
Pull my finger.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely, when Shannon and the Clams first started, we were very, like, open. We love everybody kind of people, and we've played tons of benefits for...
Oh, yeah, I'm not implying anything of that. I just was, like, curious if that ever be, you know, because...
Yeah,
people
have definitely thought that before.
But on the same topic, now I feel like I'm going down a Latter-day Saint sinkhole right here. I've also noticed on a lot of your videos and, like, interviews and stuff like that, there are people that are just like, I love you, Shannon. Do you get that at shows a lot? Like, it seems like people want to throw themselves at you.
Right. I was at South By, and that was definitely the case.
Did I meet you there? Did I meet you before?
Maybe
you
briefly.
You look so familiar to
me. That, well, you played two shows, right? Or maybe
at South
more,
By, I played like
a million.
Yeah.
I saw two. The one at night, you played indoors in that little tiny shanty, like...
At Hotel Vegas?
Yes. Yes.
Where I had an asthma attack on stage and a girl crowd surfed me in albuterol.
Yes, that was
that
amazing.
That was amazing.
But people were freaking out. Like, it was like Beatles level.
That's how we like it. I love it like that. That's my preference, for sure. I don't really want people to throw themselves at me, but sometimes it happens. I did get attacked on stage recently, but they were trying. They thought that I was going to be really into it.
What do you mean by...
Some dude crowd surfed to the stage and then tackled me, arms and legs wrapped around me, and started kissing my neck. And I grabbed him and threw him into the audience.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's
And
pretty...
then I started playing again.
What city was that in?
That was in Santa Ana, California. It's really cool there.
Except for that guy.
Except for that guy, but I think I've humiliated him enough. You know,
that's like the ultimate rejection, getting tossed off stage.
Well, I got hurt. Like, I could have fallen backwards and electrocuted myself.
Oh, yeah.
Something.
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that it's totally, you know,
gross.
Just shouldn't happen anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. People cross boundaries, which I don't like, but.
Well, it's got to be tough just being a female. I mean, it's such a cliche thing to talk about, but, you know, being a female musician in a rock band, I mean, it's like, you know, I feel like it's got to be a difficult. You know, gender barrier in and of itself, you know, it's like you're going to be overly sexualized just for being in a band, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely, I think it was worse at first.
And then you threw a guy off stage.
I basically don't let that kind of stuff happen.
Yeah.
If anyone tries to take something in a certain direction that's like uncomfortable or uncalled for or just plain...
Kind of like this
can
interview.
You cuss on here?
Yeah, I think you
shitty.
Can.
Then I'll just like stop it right away and assert myself, no problem. But when I first started, and I was just a new little guy, I didn't really know how to react when certain people would act a certain way.
Yeah,
lots of people that you think are going to be like, lots of people that I really looked up to and thought were so great, like in the garage rock scene, are real big pieces of shit. I learned that early on.
Yeah, I guess we can't talk about it. We can't.
I'm not gonna name names, but
are you like living your dream right now?
I don't know. I try not to think about it too much because I'm afraid that I'll like wake up and it'll be over. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know how to answer.
Like, what did you want to be?
I'm really happy. I'm generally a pretty happy person, but this is really cool and exciting for me because I never. Ever fathomed that I would get to be doing something like this. I didn't grow up playing music. I wasn't like all my siblings played music and uncles and stuff, but I don't know if it's because I was a girl in the family or something that I just wasn't ever encouraged. And I was dying, like asking all the time for my mom to let me take an instrument in school. And she never would let me. She'd always tell me, oh, you could play piano next year. Like, I don't want to play piano. I want to play like clarinet or whatever idiots play back then, but she wouldn't let me for some reason. My brothers are so super talented. They've been playing since they were kids. And anyway, I guess I'm just saying that because I never knew I would have.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant when I was asking you about starting relatively late. It wasn't so much about like, well, that's it, but it's like you said, it's like, I mean, and now you're touring countries based on what you're, you know, and you said you didn't really start doing it until 24 or 25. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's I try to not, like, think about it too much because...
We're bringing up all kinds of bad stuff right now.
No, not bad. Not in a bad way. I guess I'm just, like, I don't know, afraid of being really excited and something not going the way I'm envisioning. Like, I don't like to think about the future, actually.
Yeah.
I know I probably should, and most people do, but I try not to, like,
not me.
Set goals for what I'm doing right now, because I just want to be in the moment and, like, enjoy it as much as possible and not stress too much about what I'm not doing or something.
See, this makes me wish that you don't talk to the boyfriend that gave you your first base, so then I could ask you, like if you were, like, not rubbing in his face, but being like, oh, I'm playing your bass and I'm touring the world now. Look at me, you know?
I have done a little bit of face rubbing before. Not with him, though, because I was like 15
yeah.
or something. But when I started playing, actually playing bass and writing songs and stuff, that was about, that all came about because I had like a super insane breakup and like, I don't know, was really bad. So I like dedicated that first album to that person, but you know, not in a like, not in a sweet way.
Yeah,
you know?
No, everyone.
I wouldn't be doing this if you hadn't done this to me. So, and in a way, I'm really grateful for all the horrible shit I went through because I won't take shit from anyone.
Yeah, it's funny. Every like horrible breakup, it's like, or even just like super dramatic breakup, it kind of like paves the way, and you're like, I'm not gonna do that again.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not really afraid of those kinds of negative experiences anymore because
exactly.
I appreciate so much like what
is that why
I can get out of it.
Would I be wrong in saying that this album sounds happier?
You're right. I think it's a little less dark than Sleep Talk definitely has some dark moments, but yeah, this is a little bit happier, I think.
Is that because you think of where you're at?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I write songs based off current events in my life, which is funny because Cody and I are so opposite. I wish you could meet him.
Yeah, I know. I was going to ask how that
works with
the songwriting.
Should I check my phone and see if he's almost here? Probably not. No.
You can tell him we've got pizza waiting.
he and I are really opposites, but we're also kind of like weird little star twins. Because we have such similar tastes and think similarly, and but our song, what am I trying to say? Like the beef that we pump into our songs. That sounds disgusting. That sounds
Shannon and the beef pumps.
That sounds like a great way, though, to describe a song.
Well,
what are your influences?
The content.
The marrow of the
song. The content is really different. He is a fantastic, super talented writer, and his songs are basically all little short stories, fairy tales that are, I think, really well crafted and not based on anything. In fact, the few songs he wrote on the first album that I personally think, he won't admit it, are based on real events he hates and won't play. And they're so good. They're the best songs. Well, they're not the best, but they're wonderful, and he won't play them, and I think it's because they're real, and it's hard for him.
Interesting.
And then my songs are generally based on experiences, and so, like, each album so far is like a little time capsule in my life and Cody's life, in a way.
Yeah. And so, and do you guys split up more of the songwriting on this? Is this more of a collaborative effort? It seems as though, like, it's slowly become, like, the two of you.
I know. That's why I really hate the name of the band. I was thinking in the van yesterday, I was like, what if we just call it Shody or Conan? I can't do it. It's too late. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, we work together a lot.
Yeah.
He prefers when he writes a song that I keep my greasy little paws off it. And he just writes it and shows it to me, and I figure out a bass line, or he might already have one. But I think actually I wrote most of the bass lines on his songs on this album. And then when I write a song, if I don't have the full structure already there, then I'll have like a chorus and maybe a bridge idea, and then we'll work together to piece them together. Yeah, I usually write all the backups for any of the mutual songs. You know, we all have our hands in each other's stuff, I guess.
So you're playing New York tonight and tomorrow night, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then where do you go? Is it mostly U.S.?
Oh, yeah. We were in Canada for 2 days.
Oh, yeah. You did North by Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Actually, turned out really fun.
You know, I was having this conversation with Destruction Unit's booking agent because we just did a show on Sunday with them, and he was just coming from there. And I was like, you know what's weird? Is like you go to Toronto thinking it's just going to be this cold, banal city because it's like it is. It's a super corporate city. But I have so much fun every time I go there. It's so weird. I mean, it's usually for music and something related, like North by Northeast, but like it's actually a really fun time.
It's fun. I've had so much fun every time I play there. I mean, I think because it's so cold and corporate that like all these people react so wildly and like love stimulation, like crazy stimulation that's not, you know. So I definitely always have such a great time in Toronto. Montreal?
See, that was part of the, you know, because everyone likes going to Montreal because it's a nice city. It's culturally vibrant. But yeah, it's like, it's almost like, you know, I don't want to throw New York under the bus, but like, you know, New York has kind of come back full circle where there's a lot of the like arms crossed head nod. Is he?
Do you want
to... Cody.
Hello. I made it.
You did. Just put on those headphones and you can talk into that microphone.
Mm.
We were just talking about your songwriting working together. So, she basically said you liked her to keep her dirty paws off of your songs.
Yeah, I don't know. They usually just like come to me fully formed, and I don't know. I don't. There's usually aren't any parts that I feel like are missing.
Are unfinished.
And, yeah.
Should I throw you under the bus? I feel like ahead. She also said that there's some songs you won't play anymore, and she thinks it's because they have personal attachments to them.
What? Like what? There's a lot of songs that I'm really sick of that I don't like playing.
I don't want to start any fights.
Sick of.
Then the other song, and I did ask her this question as well, but in a video interview I saw that you guys had mentioned that you like a lot of weird pop songs as an influence, quote unquote. I also mentioned how I hate the influence question. But my point being is, when you are driving across the country, do you find any kind of enjoyment out of finding old AM radio weird songs like that, you know?
It's pretty rare.
It's tough to... You find certain stretches, and it's just like Christian weirdness.
Yeah. Well, now, after we spend so much time in the Bible Belt, so we've found ways to keep ourselves entertained where we don't have to, like, switch through. We listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of Louis C.K. and a lot of Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, I was going to say comedy is like seems to be the...
Yeah.
You know, it's the best. You get if you feel like you're getting somewhere twice as fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, just laughing the whole way.
It's so hard to find, I don't know, AM radio station or like any good radio stations. I usually just like, if I want to know, I just ask someone local like for like what's the good... station.
Right.
Usually someone knows. There's one weird station between LA and San Francisco that Shannon knows about.
Kings Radio
that is on AM and they play like really cool 70s pop songs and stuff.
I wonder if that's on the internet.
It's on the internet.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's streaming all the time, but I'm pretty sure you can at least download something or sometimes listen live. Should look it up.
You know, it's funny because those stations, you were talking about how you don't think they've updated any of their, like, catalog and their playlist or anything like that.
Thank goodness.
But you got to wonder at what point, okay, like, when does something become an oldie?
You know what makes me feel old? Now the 80s
Nirvana
songs.
On the classic rock stations.
Oh, my God, yeah. I can't believe it.
Yeah. But they're classic rock, but they're, like, updating. But if you listen to, like, an oldie station, they're still just jamming, like, 50s.
Yeah.
No, not...
Or 60s, you know.
The Bay Area's current oldie station... which I've listened to since I was a little kid. To me, oldies is more like 50s and 60s, early 70s. Yeah. That's just
mid-century.
Oldies.
Yeah, it doesn't
catch up.
Right.
Like, 80s music will never be oldies to me, and nor should it be, because
very
oldies
different
is like
time.
50s, 60s, early 70s. That's it.
But then where do you put
Fleetwood Mac?
Where do you put 80s music then?
It's just...
There should be an 80s station.
80s music is like its own... It's like unrelated to the 90s. It's so... wild and out there.
I'm just envisioning some like radio station music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
That's real.
I know.
That
happens. There's a station in New Jersey that only plays Monkees songs.
Whoa!
I kid you not.
That's cool.
That's gotta be like a.
It's near Ocean City, New Jersey.
Is it a real? Like
it's a very real station.
Or what do they call those ones out of the basement? Like ham radios? Not one of those.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is legit, and it's like you hear the same. You hear Last Train to Clarksville like 30 times if you're listening to it in one day.
We used to get on 1550 AM. It was like piped in from New York. I think it was KFRC. I don't know if it had a different name out here, but it was this. Michael Scott Shannon's the DJ, and he does like this.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good. Like, it wasn't that unique, but it was like pretty solid, like 50s through 70s stuff. And then one day, like, I got in my car and turned it on, and it was like really bad Hindi pop, like new Hindi pop. And then it became like a Hindi station.
That's so random. That's still around, though, the Michael K. Shannon one.
Yeah, it's just not
probably
on
online,
the West
but not
Coast.
Where we live. Yeah, it sucks. Have you ever seen what he looks like?
He looks. No, bizarre.
Look at
him. I will. This is the wrong format. If we were on like a video thing, this is where we'd like pop in his face. So we got to wrap this up. It is only an hour show. So I'm sorry that you're just joining us late. But I do want to discuss one thing that maybe you can kind of help me navigate here. What is the theme behind this Double Dragon video I see you guys starting that your brother made?
Oh. So
you've been exploring Barf Snake films.
Barf Snake.
Well, actually, it comes up when I Googled, because I was looking up Shannon the Clams, and I Googled, I think, Shannon Shaw, and that's why it came up.
Oh, really? Yeah. Funny.
You got to comb through your Google results or something.
I guess so. I don't even want to see what's on there, honestly.
So, wait, just, I want to interrupt. Someone outside was just, like, taking a big, luscious bite of pizza and, like, staring into my eyes.
Well, we like to say that this is the date table here, because it always is.
I think it is.
It definitely is the date table. And 9 times out of 10, it's like, you can tell they just don't want to make eye contact, you know, or don't want to look in.
No. The temptation is.
Yes.
Overwhelming. So, the double dragons, or twin dragons, or whatever. I don't know. That was actually, like, that entire video is, like, basically, like, a long accident, I guess. Like, Dan...
There was no plan.
Yeah, Dan just got the camera, and...
He's my older brother.
Let's make a movie. And then we just started making up stuff. And then it's really unravels and really doesn't make any sense at the end.
Oh, come on. You didn't see where it's going? No, I think it just went over your guys' heads.
I think so. I kind of want to play that as the outro.
Sure.
While I'm binging that.
Yeah. Bing it.
Is your brother, does he do... Because I know he did the one, I want to say, I know Hunk is in the name, the video for the...
He did Hunk Hunt.
Yeah.
He also did a Hunks and His Punks video for Bad Boy. And he just did a new Hunks song that the video's not out yet, but it's going to be really good. Involves people trying to try out to be the new Hunks. Trying to try out.
Trying
auditioning.
Out.
Yeah.
Auditioning.
Yes.
Auditioning to be the new Hunks. So there's a lot of like greased up people doing weird dances and stuff. It's really good.
Well,
but he's like a videographer making music videos for Bay Area people. He did a Peach Kelly pop video. What else has he done?
He did another Hunks video.
Which
Bad
one?
Boy.
I said that.
Oh. Well, he did it.
He never listens to me.
Well,
staring at the pizza.
Yeah. We do have pizza waiting. So I think that's it. But I'm going to try. Joe, do you have the volume up?
little
I think that
that's Joe.
Means Sega make the perfect team, like Mario and Luigi.
I think that's a good sample, though, that you guys make a good team, like Mario and Luigi.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of true.
All right, well, we'll take it out with that. Shannon, Cody, thank you so much for coming by.
Sure.
We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
It's fun. And we'll see you in about 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. Perfect team. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.